This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of...
Live, Hal.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
Hey guys, it's Tim. So I'm doing a quick post-recording drop to add in here as an intro to the show. As we started recording, I didn't really know what this was, and then I realized what it is. Something that may end up being a semi-regular show for me, so I figured I might as well give it an official title with an intro like this. So this is the first and possibly only, but possibly not, episode about a topic that I'm really interested in, which is live wrestling in general, the feel of live wrestling, what makes shows special, why wrestling is an art form that's meant to be watched live. So go ahead and enjoy the first episode here of We'll Do It Live. It is 2017, and we would be remiss if we didn't start out the year with something special, talking about probably my TV show of the year, possibly my promotion of the year for 2016, CWF Mid-Atlantic. And with them having their biggest show just recently, Battlecade 17, if you can imagine the company's been running for that long, I thought I would sit down with a friend and associate, someone who I know off the internet who was also there live. First, obviously, the one who I consider a friend is John Filipovich. Johnny, how are you doing tonight?
Woohoo! Two podcasts in the same week. I'm back in the game, baby.
Yeah, that's
and finally doing one with you.
We've been meaning to do this forever. You are the, creator of Barbed Wire City is what most people know you for. I know you from doing reaction shows on the PWO PTBN feed for a while there. I really enjoyed that. And just talking back and forth about progress secretly, as I think you're officially not supposed to talk about it publicly anymore because it's not a buzzy, fun, interesting promotion anymore. So we do it in the cover of in the cloak of the DMs now. And then my specialist guest, no, I can't say that, is JB from PW Ponderings. And I guess we can say, even though it hasn't started yet, going to be the official CWF reviewer for The Torch. JB, how are you doing tonight?
Excellent, Tim. Great to be with you guys. Spent time with Johnny P. Seems like just a few days ago down here in North Carolina. Great to do a podcast and talk about the product that so many people are already talking about, CWF Mid-Atlantic.
And that's what it's really all about, as you said. I mean, this is a company that it's hard to not say what are they doing that's just so great? Because a lot of these talents, while not, a lot of them, but a good amount of them are wrestling other places. They're doing other shows. Particularly, you could say Trevor Lee, I think out of everybody here, has the highest profile outside of CWF. But they're nowhere near as good as they are in CWF Mid-Atlantic. And it comes down to, I think, the production team is passionate. That includes, the commentaries, the cameramen, the editors, everybody. They're super passionate about the product. The commentary is amazing. The storytelling, the booking, the workers are also, connected to each other. And it's probably a familial thing. But, that also equates to the live show. And that's really what this is about. I don't really want to review the show and break it down, because everybody's going to get a chance to see these matches as they play on YouTube over the next couple of weeks. But realistically, the live experience seems to be what it's all about, especially, wrestling in general. But when you got something special like this, I think the live experience is even that much more. So your guys' experiences so far with going to CWF Live, start out with Johnny, because I know it's probably a little bit less as you're kind of making that trek out to CWF, but kind of what's your experience with CWF beginning just as a fan watching it? Where did you start? And then what made you decide, hey, I got to get out there, even if it is a bit of a drive for you to make it to the show?
Yeah, JB has a little more experience, and that's cool. That's why I partnered with him on this excursion. I found out about them because, well, I didn't know I knew about them. I've been a Torch subscriber for forever, and I listened to Bruce Mitchell's audio show, and he would periodically talk about regional indies and local indies that he goes to, and one that he actually was talking about through the years was CWF. I didn't realize it at the time. I actually had kind of a snooty outlook on it because I was just, it sounded, he would only tell the stories where it was like, hey, we just get like Ivan Koloff in the main event against some local guy and then everything else is Weekend Warriors. And I didn't really know that these guys were building up to something over the years. And then last year, our mutual friend, Dylan, we had a conversation where we were talking with people online about like, can you, it came off of what's a hot topic right now, New Japan and the G1 from a year and a half ago. And there was a match where a guy did amazing leg work to another guy, and then the guy popped up for the last 5 minutes and did all kinds of amazing, like, over-the-top spots that involved jumping and top ropes. And I said, is it possible? I said, are we just jerks and it's just not possible with the athleticism now? And he said, yeah, it is. And he said, here's a link to YouTube. And it was one of the CWF Mid-Atlantic shows. And it was Andrew Everett doing a match, and it was awesome. And I kind of had that in my head, and then I kept, you know, an eye on Dylan's Twitter because he's the guy who hooked me up with the really good wrestling. And I started interacting with these guys. I met a few people through Dylan over WrestleMania weekend, Stutzy in particular, and I realized Stutzy's the same guy I had kind of been interacting with here and there on PWO over the years, although he hasn't been there in like 2 years. And before that, Death Valley Driver. So it got to the point where I was watching the show weekly. You know, we all know the Trevor Lee, Roy Wilkins thing. That's really what got me to be a week-to-week watcher. I binge-watched and then that live experience where you're tweeting while watching it kind of a thing. Next thing you know, I'm saying, like, maybe I'll come down, because people kept saying, like, you should come down. So they started to become online friends with, like, Stutzy. Grant Sawyer, who's the amazing technical director, the production manager of the show, and Cecil Scott, who does color commentary. Next thing you know, I said, you know what? Let me financially look into this. And I went down, and we'll get to the actual experience, but it's mind-blowing. And it's something that I needed to do because, well, I'll just save it because I've already said too much. You know, I'll throw it back to you guys.
Yeah, well, JB, I mean, the similar thing. What was your first experience with CWF, and then what was the okay enough? I'm going to go to the show. Or
well, I moved to North Carolina 6 years ago, and I grew up in northern Kentucky near Cincinnati, Ohio, and I actually had kind of casually heard about CWF. Once again, give him his props, as much as I hate to my friend Bruce, as Johnny P has already said. Little bash on Bruce. Every once in a while doesn't hurt anything. Bruce and I actually became pretty quick friends. About 5 years ago, we were at the NWA Legends Fan Fest, hanging out, having a beverage or two. And he had mentioned this promotion that was close to Greensboro and said, you really need to check this out. I think this is something that you need to see. And I thought, oh, it's like any other independent promotion, you know, where it's, you know, it's a, you know, maybe one or two guys that you can spotlight and you would like, and you can enjoy it for what it is. And then pretty much just sit back and just kind of goof at the rest of it. And so fast forward a couple more years, I still hadn't been to a live show. And 2 years ago, I went to my first show and haven't looked back since. I live in Charlotte, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from Gibsonville, the little town where CWF is located. And I make that trek at least once or twice a month to a show. And it's something to behold. It really is. As Johnny P said, the atmosphere there is just something we'll talk more about. But it's reminiscent to a bygone era, but still has an eye on the future, if that makes sense. It's a different atmosphere compared to most places you will go. It's unique to itself. It has its own ecosystem. But with saying that, it's something that it should be, and I think will be appreciated more as we go into 2017 and as more and more people take in the product. It's just something that is unique and a throwback in many ways, but a throwback in all the best ways possible.
Yeah, and it really feels like the indies, you know, outside of WWE, WCW, I guess you could even count ECW, you know, Jim Crockett, all the big promotions that have existed that are kind of looked at as the not the indies. And even, you know, you go back into territories, I guess it wasn't quite the same because the territories did exist and they were fractured. But ever since, there has been an idea of like a monolith, and really WWE is really that monolith company. It feels like the smaller brand indie companies that thrive always thrive because they intentionally are something counter to. And CWF, as you talked about, does such a great job of embracing that it's different. And, you know, that, you know, this is in a different building. This is in front of the old style fans. You know, when they're running in a gym or they're running outdoors. I mean, what makes, I think, the fan who looks at a CWF show go, oh man, this is really, you know, stands out, is that, you know, WWE, for all intents and purposes, they try to run all these different cities and have them all look exactly the same. And every crowd acts exactly the same, and every match is very similar. And I think that that's kind of just the hallmark of what works, is you go for the something different. And CWF stands out with, you know, characters, and that they are regional. They are where they're at. And I think that is going to be a breath of fresh air for fans who are watching only WWE right now, and they're kind of, this is where it's at. But I mean, comparatively, I know, Johnny, you went to ECW shows quite a bit. I would assume you've been to ROH shows. I don't know, but how do you think that CWF so far as a live product compares to all of these other kind of companies that are thought of as having special crowds?
Oh man, I have so many thoughts on this. Okay, let me try to. One thing Jeremy JB is learning about me is that once you get me going, it's like tough to stop me. So I'm trying to be good about this so I don't lose my new pal.
We'll knock you off the road if we have to.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm known, even though it's not something that I'm a style I haven't been into in years, but I'm known as like an ECW guy. The first thing you realize is that it's a lot like the really early days of ECW, and that's hard because I think the legend has really taken over, even for people who were around back then. Like ECW wasn't fans just trying to stand out and get over, and like the people that you knew became almost a gimmick, like Straw Hat Guy. Like I went out of my way during the documentary Barbed Wire City, the unauthorized documentary of ECW. To like meet these fans and talk to them, and they were helpful in getting you in touch with people, and like they were cool, but by that point there it was like they were almost like famous. Like everybody knows John Bailey, the Straw Hat Guy, at least from that time period. They don't have that here, and that's what was refreshing. Like you mentioned ECW, and I went to the arena a bunch, and then ROH, and it's funny, you and I haven't talked about this, shockingly. I was at the very first ROH show. In fact, I missed, I think, one the whole first year. I was at over 50 before Gabe Sapolsky left in October of 2008. From Philly to New York to Jersey to like one or two other like random places. So yeah, those were my two promotions. And I thought I was done following promotions before I found Mid-Atlantic. I thought I was going to be a single-serving fan who's just like, I watch matches. I don't care about stories and promotions to get in the way of matches, because I was frustrated. And this place is different. The atmosphere it's pure because they stick to the macro idea. And I think JB could speak to this even better, but it's what if an old, I mean, Brad actually says it in the first episode, and he said it many times. It's kind of their pitch. What if an old like studio, and they're in the Mid-Atlantic, which helps them. So there's like callbacks to those old Mid-Atlantic studio tapings. But what if a territory had survived and was running like bi-weekly and had that small town and regional appeal, but with kind of like a modern, not even modern storytelling necessarily, which is like an appeal, but modern athletes, modern workers. And that's just, it is both the coolest thing, because I grew up wanting to go to the Dallas Sportatorium every day, cause I thought World Class was on live every day at 4 PM. And then the ECW, because before the ECW arena, because before Fight Club even came out in like 99, it felt like, well, they must be in this warehouse. The idea of Lucha Underground is essentially what I thought ECW was. Like a bunch of people, like word of mouth before the internet really hit, being like, yo, you got to go to the garage. But the garage was the ECW arena. And that's where I wanted to go. And this is the first place I found in forever. Because the ROH never really had that. And we're spoiled up here in the Northeast. Except it got very smarky and snarky. And, you know, we all got jaded and older and whatever. And they don't have that there. And I'm sure we'll get into, like, the way where people like me sit versus where, like, the or Jeremy, the quote-unquote out-of-towners sit versus, like, your local people who just kind of walk up and they're just, like, they're not following. They're not going to listen to this podcast. They don't care. They know where the wrestling is every 2 weeks, and they go to the wrestling.
Right. And, I mean, that's such a great point to think about it, and it's probably part of what gives it its charm. But before we move on to that, I do want to hear a similar kind of, what's your background when it comes to going to live shows as well, and where do you think CWF compares, JB?
Well, my viewing of CWF compared to the other things that I've seen in the past is, you know, it's different, but it's similar, if that makes sense. I know that sounds very oxymoronic, but it's, I actually was at the ECW arena. I've traveled the Northeast. John and we had a great conversation while I was down here. I have a lot of friends from his area of the world, so I ventured in that territory as well. But as far as a home promotion for me growing up, it's a bit unusual. I've got a cross section. I have Memphis because I was close to Louisville. I have the Poffos back in the day with ICW in Lexington, Kentucky. Then I had Georgia Championship Wrestling, which is my first memory is Gordon Soley in Southern Ohio when Ole Anderson started touring in Southern Ohio. So those were my promotions. As a teenager, it was more Crockett Promotions, and then in my later teens, it was traveling and watching Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So Smoky Mountain is something that I could compare to what's going on right now in CWF and what has gone on in CWF. Talking to Stutzy and the guys who are involved with it, they will definitely tell you that old Smoky Mountain crowd and the old philosophies that were behind Cornette's promotion are definitely part of what's going on in CWF. I was fortunate enough to see about 30 to probably 45, maybe 50 shows of that promotion with Cornette's promotion with Smoky Mountain, and saw some of the bigger events. And, you know, that's my background. As far as modern day promotions, I've been to ROH. I've been to a lot of other things as well, but primarily going to live events now with CWF, and of course some other independents here in North Carolina has kind of become my passion over the last couple of years.
All right. So I guess, yeah, the next thing I wanted to get into was, kind of just stepping in the door. I mean, I guess let's talk about in general, but you know, with the slant of specifically this recent Battlecade, but when you show up for a show in the CWF and Johnny did allude to it, that there's the kind of locals who are there because it's wrestling every 2 weeks, which I just love. And I think that they probably bring the energy that makes this show feel like it's a time machine. But is it that when you step through the doors or when you're waiting in line outside to go in, does it feel like you've stepped back in time somewhat for either of you? Or, I mean, I don't know who to throw to on that.
Well,
Not that much.
I mean, if you're talking about what Johnny was talking about, and Tim, you were talking about too, the smart fan, quote unquote, you'll have that in the crowd there, but you also have the regulars who are just there to see the show, and you'll have conversations with locals who are smart and understand, you know, what's going on. And then you've got others who are there just to enjoy it for what it is, which is the beautiful thing of CWF. So going into the facility, number one, when you look at it, it's a strip mall. It's not a large scale arena. It's not something that's like overly advertised. You just kind of drive up on it on a little country road off the main interstate. And if you didn't know where it was, you wouldn't find it. It's one of those things. You just have to, you know, kind of, it just shows up and there it is. And then when you enter the facility, there's a large lobby area with lots of memorabilia on the walls, a concession stand, and just an open area where the floor has the huge old school Mid-Atlantic logo on the floor from the old territorial days. It's beautiful. And to the right, you'll see a setup where a lot of guys will set up their merch. And that's before you go in, and I'll let Johnny P take you the rest of the way.
Yeah, yeah. The only real downfall, because it's actually the neat thing is, okay, so I feel sensitive about this a little bit, and this is perfect that you're the host, Tim, because you're an LA guy and you do stuff about like craft beers and whatnot, and I'm somebody who is I'm generalized as being from Philly, or sometimes people say New York. And even if you say the Lehigh Valley, like I was born in Allentown, which is, you know, more of a city, it's more urban. The funny thing is, I actually, where I live now is far more rural than where the CWF, Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium is. And I don't want to make it sound, it's important to note that, like, while the locals are the locals, and some of them just, they don't care about necessarily being quote unquote smart. They just want to see wrestling. It isn't as if you miss the building, you're going to go like past like a shack and there's going to be a guy with like a dog that's in a chair next to him as if he's having a conversation with him. And he's going to be like, oh, hi. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Hillbillyville necessarily or anything. But it is a little bit off the beaten path. The downfall is that there's only one bathroom per gender. And, yes. The lines can get a little crazy, so you kind of have to pick and choose when you sneak out, because before the show there's a line, and intermission, forget about it. You can just run outside and just like go around the building and find a place to piss in the parking lot. That's your best bet. But what I love about it is it's...
Come on, the New York City boys talking about pissing in the parking lot, is that it?
Please say Philadelphia. By the way, the arena, ECW arena... Also a ridiculous place.
Yeah. No, I'm just going against the way more. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I know. Yeah. The neat thing is I used to work when I was a teenager. I worked for several months at in the back of a music and sound place. It was like Dave Phillips Music and Sound here in Allentown on the east side. And I was so obsessed with wrestling, and in particular the ECW arena, and the idea of doing shows in like a concrete warehouse type place that you could dress, that I was obsessed with their storage place, which is I was just the schlub who found stuff and brought it to the floor. And I would always look and be like, man, I'd like to rent out the back of this place and run shows here. This would be perfect. And here's where I'd have the entrance. And basically, if you walk in the Sportatorium, it's that place I wanted to do shows in. It's like perfect. It has its own personality, but that's because they dressed it up that way. Otherwise, it would just kind of look like a strip mall warehouse, a warehouse within a strip mall, so to speak. But the personality, when you get in there, they even have the flags that you would see on the studio shows from like the early to mid 80s of the Mid-Atlantic. And yeah, they have a little modern setup with a ramp, a short ramp. Bleachers in what I always want to say is the hard cam area, but it's not. Chairs on one side, and then right by where they do the broadcast, there's kind of like a VIP-ish section with much more comfortable chairs. And I've been lucky enough to sit there twice, so I kind of want to keep that going. But that's your basic layout. There's nothing. I mean, JB, am I missing anything? Like really.
Not really. I mean, it's pretty straight. It's pretty straightforward. What you see on TV or on YouTube is what you get, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, it's the beauty of it. It's definitely an homage to the studio shows, just like you would have saw in the old days of Georgia Championship Wrestling or Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, like the flag set up, in the rafters. Also, you know. We have bleachers on one side and chairs set up on I guess you would say the east and west sides, and on the north side is the bleachers. And
it's cozy. I think that's the biggest thing. Sorry, JB. The biggest thing is that, I mean, they black out the appropriate areas, and like, yes, it is just kind of a warehouse, but you don't feel that way when you're in there. It's really, really cozy. And the only thing they don't have is enough like room to kind of, they can't really expand. Like the neat thing, and yet the thing, it's kind of like PWG's quandary, which is a totally different promotion, but it's perfect because Tim, you're one of the people who actually gets into that building in Reseda, which is another kind of a hard ticket. And I have a feeling this year CWS is going to become kind of a harder ticket. This, I know we're not going to talk about results or whatever, but the experience of being there, I thought they were packed to the gills in October. I was not prepared for Battlecade. Battlecade was like, yeah. Was, I mean, there were even jokes because there actually were people within the local fire department there who said if they had to come and inspect it, they kind of were like, look, it wouldn't just be five people over capacity kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was a wink and a nod from the
local fire department,
that's for sure. Yeah, it was very much shoehorned in every possible way you could think of. It's the largest crowd that CWF has ever had. I've been there for some large crowds in the past, but this is exceptional. It really was.
And the atmosphere is un-freaking believable.
Yes.
Which you can see on this week's show and for the next 2 weeks. It really is something to behold. Even you're not, you need to go there. That would be my biggest message during this podcast. But you are getting a good feel. It isn't as though, like, I would go to a lot of those ROH shows and in 05, 06 that were mind-blowing, and then watch them on TV and go, this is good, this DVD, but when people would complain about things, I'd be like, no, the crowd was nuclear. You can kind of hear it. The YouTube show, Grant, does such an amazing job, and the acoustics in there are good enough. Like, you watch that opener with Kane Justice and Dirty Daddy that dropped last night on YouTube, you feel it. You're going to get a sense of kind of what it's like to be there.
That was the first thing that we said to each other after the show was that opener. Mm-hmm. That opener was so hot. The crowd was hot. And that was the next day when we had our little summit over the biscuits. We talked a little bit about that as well, and just hoping that it came across that well on the YouTube channel.
Oh,
hoping that it was going to be that hot, and it was.
Yeah, it came across amazing, and that was actually, I wanted to get into, as you talked about, the smarks are kind of in one area, and the people who are just there for the show are in another area, the local type. But, like, the crowd may in some ways self-segregate, but it seems to me on tape it feels like there's still a sense of community in the crowd, and people are comfortable to react. Because they were so hot for that opener. I think Kane Justice is definitely a standout. I mean, if you listen to This Week in Wrestling, me and Pete already really enjoying this kid. I just think he brings a lot to the table. But the CWF crowd in general seems to give a lot to the fans. I mean, there's the vaunted PWG crowd, which I happen to be a part of. I don't think it's as big of a deal as people make it out to be, but it's a good crowd. But have you... Okay, number one, let's just start with the little bit and maybe just kind of expand on it outwards from here. But do you feel like there is a sense of community in the crowd, even between the smart fans coming out of town and the locals who are there for the wrestling?
I think so. I've been there long enough to, I guess you'd say I'm the quote-unquote smart fan, but I'm also the local, kind of a hodgepodge there. And I think the smart fans recognize what it is and respect the business and respect the fans, and they join in. John can attest to this as well. I mean, we're both sitting there close side by side with Papa Hells at this last show, and we're getting into it. We're part of the show. We're getting into it, and we're not doing it in a quote-unquote smarky way. We're getting into it to enjoy it for what it is. And I think that's the enjoyment that we both had. Walking away from a CWF show, it's a totally different feel than walking away from any other show that's going right now, just because we don't have to play quote unquote smart. We can enjoy it for what it is and enjoy wrestling for what it's always been.
I'm so glad that you brought up this. I'm sorry. You want to go with what you were saying, Sam?
Go ahead.
I'm so glad you brought that up, just because that's one of my biggest human takeaways from this continuing adventure. And my love affair with this promotion that I found online is the community. I finally feel a part of a community with wrestling. It's this neat thing where, like, I'm really trying to make an effort this year, but I was building up to it even last month with, like, changing how I interact with wrestling. And I'm in my mid-30s. I'm about to be 36. I've lived through ECW in my teen years. I lived through kind of, like, as I always like to call it, the artistic reaction period within the Northeast, and specifically the hotbed that used to be Philadelphia with ROH. And I was at all those shows. And I heard a lot about community, but I never, like, felt it, or I didn't feel like it quite was right for me in some way. And as the Northeast kind of cooled off, and plus it just was so, I mean, geez, ECW is famous for the chants and the smart crowd, in quotes. And then ROH was like that times 10 in certain ways. And like, I'm driving 8 hours one way just to come down and experience this, because there is a kind of a purity to it, but it's not, I'm not as romantic about the idea of like people throwing piss on Jim Cornette or pulling a knife on him. I know that's some kind of like cred that he likes to have. And I don't hate Jim Cornette, for the record. I know it's the tone I took. It's just, I get sick of hearing the way he speaks about those things a lot. I get his point. His point is valid. It's just that I think we all, when we feel a certain way, get frustrated. I do it with New Japan. Like yesterday morning, it starts out sort of articulate and thoughtful, and then it gets weirdly venomous. And then I have to go like, hey, calm the F down, John. Like, just say your point. And I think that I think that's how some of the old timers start to talk about things. And I get it. This is this great. It's exactly what Stutzy says. Again, not to get too far away from the community thing, but it is the perfect melding of the best things that I liked about or had heard about old territories and old, you know, the weekly town or the biweekly town, and the modern and just being connected to the internet and not being closed off. It really is that. The biggest thing is I found community there. Like, I now talk to Jeremy all the time. I talk to JB. We can't have this podcast without giving a shout out to Dustin Spence, who has been a great friend to me, who's another person who convinced me from his Making Towns podcast and some of his articles to go down there. Sophia Moon is the local. I think she's got you beat, JB, because I think she's the...
Oh, yeah, by far. She's local.
I think she said she's within 20 minutes of the building, and she's online all the time. You can find her on my Twitter all the time interacting. I met Joe White while I was there, who I think drove down from the Virginia area. I just did a podcast with him. He's a nice guy who has gone to a lot of the shows. I'm going to forget people. I know we've talked about Bruce. There are so many people. There are people that... I've never given so many hugs to people before, and not just workers and staff who completely embraced me and treated me great. But there is this ecosystem. I think one of you said ecosystem, that like we all interact, but it's like we all kind of have our place there. Like everything kind of fits. And it almost sounds like I'm talking about a locker room. Like I would hear that about ECW when I was doing the documentary. But that's the way it feels with the fan base, too. And I'm sure some of them never give any thought to it. But analytical people like me who end up on podcasts like this and who are kind of interlopers who were invited in the door and got to stay, I feel it. And I'm very appreciative of it, because that's something that you just don't get at many places. And even if they're smaller, intimate shows, I mean, look, wrestling fans can be weird about stuff. We leer at wrestlers sometimes for no reason. And they're like, why are these dudes staring at me? Do they want an autograph or to fight me? You don't get that at this place as much. You just go up to people and go, hey, man, thanks. And it's cool. Or you just see somebody and you make a quip and they joke back to you. And then you're having a 10-minute conversation. That's really rare and really neat. And that's the thing I appreciate probably the most about... After 8 hours, that's what I need, you know?
It's really the most authentic product out there. I tell that to people all the time. It really is. And like John said, you know, even after the show, we hung out, we were talking to a lot of the staff and even some of the talent, and they're very real and very passionate about what they do. And they very much are a family. It's seeing everybody work together for a common goal. And they really believe that they're putting out the best product they possibly can. And they feel like they're on the verge of doing something even better and even bigger. And that's something that, you know, is something I think that all of us as wrestling fans can admire and hope that other companies strive for the same thing, where they work towards a common goal as a group. It doesn't matter how talented the group, the roster is, they get the most out of every single individual they have there. And that's something that I cannot say for every group that's out there putting on a show.
Well, and
hey, Tim, can I throw something in here real quick?
Of course.
Because I one of the things that I wanted to mention is that because I'm the Northeasterner and there is this Northeast tradition that's both good for wrestling and really like horrible and crippling about fans. There's this idea of who we are. And we're not unified, but you know, the gist of it, for better or worse. I wanted to make it clear when I came down, like, I am going to boo the crap out of heels, even if I think they are supremely talented. There are times in both shows, specifically like the first match of this one, where I was next to Spence, and I am leaning over, and we're whispering, kind of like more like, oh, you know, like look at the way he sells, or look at the way he puts his hand out here, stuff like that. And I saw something so awesome, and I got up and I clapped. And I was like, yeah, that's beautiful. And then I realized the guy I'm clapping for is a heel. and that I felt very self-conscious of it. And in the Northeast, that wouldn't have even been a thing. It's almost a thing to turn on baby faces, you know. And I sat down and I said that to Stutzy after. He said, oh, it doesn't matter, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, no, it does to me, though, because I want to be, you know, I know you're not saying that, but for me, it's a big deal. And I've even talked to some of the guys. There was a heel who, I won't mention his name, but he is on Twitter a lot and loves the Lakers. And I knew this, you know what I'm talking about. And I was saying he's a bum, he stinks, he doesn't have what it takes. I'm just basically thinking of anything to go off of to give him heat. As he's on the ground beating the crap out of his opponent, saying, oh, you're doing that because you know that once he gets up, you're done and all this. And I said, I said something. And he yelled something back at me. And I go, yeah, and the Lakers suck too. And he hit the guy. I said, when he gets back up, he's going to do something. And he whacks the guy and he goes, oh, is he getting up now? Is it now? And he goes to hit the guy one more time. And as he's doing it, I go like, oh, and the Lakers suck too. You suck and the Lakers suck too. And his eyes come right to me. Like I said, your mama, you know, suck stick or something. And he looks at me, he goes, and he nailed the voice of it, because it would have been very easy to get cutesy or get laughs or whatever, and he's a heel, and he goes, we're in the middle of a rebuilding year, and I can't do his voice. But I had to bury my face, because I was like, well, A, shut me up good, B, best comeback ever from a heel. That wasn't like guttural, like Northeasterner. And I just thought it was like, it's, you can't get that kind of interaction anymore. Because in the Northeast, there'd be eight guys trying. It would be a guy doing it. First of all, if I were in the Northeast, there would be 10 of me trying to think of anything they ever said to this guy at a signing or something, or on Twitter. And even I would be doing it with different intentions. You know what I mean? If I were doing it. And then it would just become a smarky thing. And there it was, like, he stayed in character while admonishing me. And I just thought that was beautiful. It's the coolest thing.
Beautiful.
They appreciate.
Yeah,
no, exactly. He didn't miss a beat.
And didn't miss a beat and went right on and moved the opponent into the ring and started on with the match, you know.
The best thing is, in that row is a lot of, you know, Sophia's on that row. You were on that row. Spence is on that row. I'm on that row. Bruce is on that row. There's a lot of there's years and years and years of like newsletter, internet, you know, reading, blah 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 blah, whatever. You never get the sense that those people are trying to like steal the show from the rest of the fans, or that it's this elbow elbow nudge nudge thing. We laugh or we give each other looks here and there, but nobody in the crowd that comment didn't overtake the match and turn that guy babyface at any point. You know, it's just, it's part of it, but it's so subtle kind of a thing. And that's what I like, is that it's really what I'm getting at is that it doesn't turn. Nothing kind of turns on anybody. And that's the good thing. There's a straightforwardness to it. And a lot of that is because the storytelling and the characterizations and the depictions of the characters are so solid and understandable.
Well, and as you're talking about it, I feel memories of stuff like that that has happened in PWG, and I think it is honestly weirdly similar in the differences, I guess, between the companies, and I don't think most people would think of it in that way, but you're also talking, I know you mentioned, you know, the wrestlers being around, and someone had mentioned, you know, selling merch, the workers doing that, and I think it's kind of an interesting thing and a creation that happened it happens in PWG as well, where as there's the, you know, the famous kind of saying like, oh, I'm not gonna pay money to watch my neighbor mow the grass, but there's something about the way that at certain wrestling shows the guys can be
out there selling merchandise, having a quick conversation with you. You, like you said, you'll just like get, shoot them a glance and say something, and then you're joking around and talking for a while, where they're not on a pedestal as a person, but it doesn't affect their superstar aura, as the crowd just still is super hot for them in the ring. And I mean, am I out of left field saying that? I mean, what's the merchandising setup there? Are the guys just out there selling shirts, and as you said, just having a chat with everybody?
It's not like it is at Super Indies. It's not a zoo. There's only two or three guys, and you'd be shocked at how their biggest star is Trevor Lee. And JB, if I'm wrong, let me know, because I've only been at two of the shows. I never feel like I couldn't walk up to the guy and get to him pretty easily. Like, I never feel like there's this line, and I feel like I'd have to maybe interrupt a conversation, but I could get to him pretty easily.
Absolutely. And, you know, Trevor's one of those guys that, you know, he's a homegrown product who's walked his way from age 12, 13 years old in the front row to starting in the ring, rolling around at like 14 and being at CWF ever since. So for the fans there, they've watched him grow up. And now we see, you know, him traveling the world. He's part of, you know, obviously Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. He's on TNA regularly. He's been part of this whole, you know, montage of stories of the Hardys. So Trevor, yes, he is the top talent there. He's the guy who's gone away, but he's never left. So he still has that same connection. And he's as open as he was from the time he was a kid to he is now as a young adult. And the reality is, you know, none of the guys there I've never seen be unapproachable. They're always very open to everybody. And it is not like the super indie group where it's you have intermission and everybody and their brother's got a merch table. It's three or four guys, you know, have a merch table set up, and that's about it. And they're willing to interact, take pictures, be there for the kids. It's very, and that's one of the things I wanted to mention as well. You go to a lot of shows on the quote unquote super indie level or indie level, and there's not a lot of kids there. There is definitely kids at these shows. That's one of the things that drew me to CWF. I wrote a huge column about this a few weeks ago at PW Ponderings about my interaction with my children and taking my daughters to CWF and seeing CWF through their eyes. So it's a different atmosphere. It's kid-friendly enough. Kids are welcome there. And I'm telling you, Grant Sawyer, who we mentioned earlier, who's head of production for CWF, there's no one in the crowd who can razz a heel as hard as his son. His son is top quality. There is no, and Bruce will tell you this, any of the veterans of the old Mid-Atlantic days, he would have fit right in at the Greensboro Coliseum, tearing into the baby faces. Because that kid, he's a natural born heel and he loves it. And, you know, it's one of those things, that's another beautiful thing about CWF is seeing things like that. And one of the other things I wanted to mention earlier too that John kind of hit on, John kind of nudged me and he said, oh no, this is not happening. When we're at the show, there was a couple guys in the corner that were starting the "this is awesome" chant. Yeah. And John said, no, not here, not here. And
yeah.
And within,
I'm telling you, happy place.
And as soon as John said that, it died. It died. There was two or three kids in the corner, probably college age, who were kind of, you know, following into the typical "this is awesome" chant, and it died a cruel death in a hurry. And, you know, that was one of the things that I kind of wanted to throw out as fan interaction. It wasn't that people kind of hushed them or tried to.
No, they didn't get shouted down. It was that people were too emotional. And those kids, but for the record, weren't trying to be obnoxious so much that's the way they – you could just – like Jeremy's right. You looked at them and you went, oh, okay. You're of that age. You're on the internet a little more. This is the way you think people interact with wrestling, which is like that's something that we're all a little older here, and we've grown up and we've seen this. We still remember that it was slightly different, say 10 to 15 years ago, definitely 15 to 20. People, younger people, like they wouldn't. That this is how you interact with wrestling in their mind. And the great thing was those people didn't shout them down, which is I would have gotten to at some point. You know, I would have been crappy. they more or less were like, I don't know what that, like, I don't know what that guy's on about. I'm too emotionally involved to care what's being yelled by that or chanted. It's like there's a certain thing where you turn your brain off when people chant as opposed to like yelling like in your area. And that's what they were doing. The demographics, if I can put a cherry on top of what JB said, the demographics there are fantastic. And in fact, my favorite people to watch are the middle-aged women who have a few too many beers, I think. But I'm not even sure. They just naturally might be just fiery. They are the best.
It's a little bit of both.
Well, and Eric Royal is the master of finding these women and go and healing them and getting heat out of them. And it doesn't take much. And it is one of the more awesome things to see. And the coolest thing, and this somewhat comes up on their YouTube show, but you really have to go there and be there in person. Because Brad and Cecil are amazing announcers. And the coolest thing is that like where we usually get sat, you can also hear them if you want. Except I didn't hear them this time. And that's because the crowd was insane. And more to my point is that you do miss out because they are filling you in with amazing information. It's just impossible without having just like a live feed without commentary to hear all the neat interactions that go on between the wrestlers in the ring, between the wrestlers in the crowd. There's so much good. Working a small room is one of the coolest things. It's a different experience. I was at Mania this year, and the spectacle is unparalleled, not just in wrestling, but for most of it. You can't go to the circus and get the same spectacle, honestly. But it isn't a small room thing. And you can't do a match the same way, especially with the interactions. You get that at this place. And that's one of the things that makes it so unbelievably special.
No, and I mean, you bring up Mania, and I had that kind of realization this year. And you were at both live, I think, but you go from watching the Evolve show with, you know, Drew Gulak or Timothy Thatcher rolling on the mat in this tiny bar, to then I turned on WrestleMania the next day, and I saw this crazy ladder match with seven guys in it and El Generico and Kevin Steen taking crazy bump. And I looked at it and I said, how do you promote both as the same thing? Like, how do you say these are both wrestling? Because one of them just isn't. I'm sorry, but WrestleMania, as you said, it's a spectacle beyond wrestling. It's just a spectacle.
It was, but honestly, by the time, and I don't mean to turn this into like a trashing mainstream wrestling thing, but by the time Shane Michael, and it's kind of appropriate that this is the match that did it for me. I mean, if you're friendly with me, you've heard the story a million times, but by the time Shane and The Undertaker came out, I was like, okay, I saw my spectacle, I'm good. I would have given anything to get out of that building because it was a mass of people. I was done. I had seen what I came to see. There was nothing after that that I really wanted to see. It was so long. And I was in love with the WWN live shows, the Evolve shows and the Super Show. And that wasn't nearly the small room that what we're talking about is. And what they did was a little bit more over the top at times. But, yeah, it's something – it's a different part of the same – it's like music. It would be like talking about jazz from the 20s and then talking about hip-hop from even 20 years ago. They're both respectable, and they're both art forms, and they fall under music, but they really aren't the same thing. And that's kind of like what we're talking about when we talk about just the WWE, your Evolve show from this year, and then your CWF big show.
It's the philosophy of a different branch on the same tree.
That's
kind of where we are at this point with that. There's no true comparison other than there's four posts and there's a set of three ropes all the way around and there's a mat. And the interaction sometimes is similar, sometimes it's dissimilar. But overall, it's pick and choose. We're in that generation right now. We really are in a pick and choose generation when it comes to professional wrestling. Lots of services out there that allow us to have that. And CWF is just another example of choice that's out there for all of us. And the live experience at CWF is something to behold, something I think that we've kind of really delved into pretty deeply. We could probably even do more. But it's something to experience, and that's something as I'm not a native North Carolinian. I moved here 6 years ago. I've been accepted, and I would suggest anyone to come down here and join, quote-unquote, us and experience what CWF Mid-Atlantic is at the Sportatorium. It's something that is unique. It's something that's not something that you can just get completely on the YouTube channel, the show itself. It's great. They do a great job of the production, but the live experience is something to behold.
No, definitely. Well, as you even said, we could probably talk about it forever, and there's still even stuff that I didn't get into here, but I kind of like to keep my shows, you know, within the hour range. I don't need to, you know, kill everybody with these long podcasts. So what I'm going to actually do is, because we didn't do it before, is take a break here, technically. We'll come back for a quick thing, but I'm just going to tease it because it's what, for me, what started putting this whole podcast together, and that is there's a particular picture that I saw of Papa Hales, Brad Stutz, and Johnny P that I just have to get the layout of what came together to create this photograph. So quick break, and then we're going to come back, and Johnny, you're going to give me the story of what set up that photo.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your...
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, so we're back really quick, and so I have to just give, you know, full disclosure on the situation. This whole podcast came together as I had been meaning to have Johnny P on, you know, the Lucha Undead show for a long time just to talk to him. And then a specific photo pops up on his Twitter that I had to show my wife, and she was going nuts. She thought it was so great because, you know, she loves Brad on commentary. Papa Hales, obviously, everyone loves Papa Hales. And then, you know, Johnny, you're in the photo too. She's not familiar with you other than me talking about you, but she's never really seen a picture of you before. And she's like, what is going on in this thing? She's like, you have to find out what's happening. And I was like, well, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this as an excuse to make Johnny do a podcast with me so I can also get him to explain what happened in this story. So there's a picture of you. It looks like you're holding a camera, making a crazy face with Brad Stutz and Papa Hales both shirtless, and you can see Cecil Scott in the background, looks like he's rushing to get somewhere, so that also, you know, adds to the ambiance. And you guys are in the middle of the CWF Sportatorium, or the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium there. And what put this together? How did this happen? You guys, is it the end of the show, the beginning of the show? What's going on? I need to hear the setup to how this happened.
This is one thing that comes in with the idea of community, but I want to be very clear, and this isn't like a velvet rope thing. Just especially because we're all wrestling fans, just be mindful. I really want everybody, I'm trying to like be super involved here. So like the next 2 weeks, especially, I'm going to try to like get as many people as I can to do a live watch, which we've all done before, but I want to see if we can just try to get these numbers kind of crazy on the YouTube page. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'm going to talk to some of my friends. I'm going to talk to Grant and Brad, see what we can do. Because the thing is, it's about community, but it's also, there's an accessibility there. And that's why I'm kind of giving this warning, because I don't want people to think that, thankfully we didn't get into too many of the stories of the weekend that me and JB did, because I don't want people to get the sense that either A, that we're completely like arrogant about the accessibility, or B, that you can just kind of like ham fist your way into these situations too. We were just lucky enough to be asked to do certain things, with some of the staff, which was really cool. So, and plus I'm a fanboy for staff more than I am for like going out and hanging out and having beers with pro wrestlers anyway. So we were hanging out as people were clearing out. And it wasn't that late that it was like exclusive or anything, but it was more of like talking to Brad, talking to Cecil, catching up. How did you feel about the show? Oh, I love this. Talking to, I think Papa Hales and I were talking to, either Rick Converse or the, Otto. It was Otto, who used to be one of the Dups. And then we were bouncing between conversations. Otto leaves, myself and Papa. Oh, by the way, no longer will people regard me as an ECW documentarist. I am now a Papa Hales award winner. I would like, just throw that in at the beginning of the show. It's fine.
Okay.
I'm joking. Papa and I walked over. I think that was the point at which we walked over. Jeremy is against the ring with Bruce Mitchell and a few others. I think Brad Attitude might have been there, or at least that's what JB tells me, because I don't remember exactly. And Michael McAllister was also there, who's another worker. And some people that were in the audience as well. I don't know what they were talking about, JB, so feel free to interject. At some point, I look over. Now, Brad is a bigger guy, and so is Papa. And Papa said he was getting so excited he was about to take his shirt off. We laughed. But Papa was already halfway with his shirt off at this point. And Brad said, well, you, Brad said something like, well, Papa's doing it, I might do it. And I think Papa was like, you better. Or it might have been the other way around. It might have been the other one saying it. Whatever happened, they both have their shirts off. And all I could think to do since I'm standing next to them is go, well, I'm going to take a picture of this because it's got to be documented. They both completely agreed. That whole thing came together in all of like 5 seconds. So yeah, I held my phone. I snapped two pictures. And that, another thing which is very clever about this building, but not by design, is that like you don't have any live tweeting during it. And you don't really, you don't get as much of a feel for the internet that you can't follow along. Like I follow along with you and everybody else on the PWG shows. That building is a void. No matter what cell service you have, you cannot penetrate it. So like live, it really is just for you in that moment. But yeah, so, and this was another moment where it took me a little while to get out of the building to tweet it, because we hung out for a little bit and talked to a few people. But yeah, that was, I guess, a celebration of Papa getting to the CWF Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium for Battlecade.
Yeah, but
Brad was the show well yeah. done. And
let's be honest. Let's be honest. I'll open up here a little bit. That's not the first time that Mr. Stutz has took his shirt off. So he's been known to do that in celebratory manner. I've seen him threaten it in restaurants and other places. And Brad, if you're listening, you know it's true. But we love Stutzy and Papa too, and those guys together are quite the duo. Maybe a buddy cop movie is budding or something there. I'm not sure.
Yes.
But we definitely could throw a script out there, and since you're on the West Coast, maybe you can talk to someone and we can get something happening.
Yeah, we got to get this put together. You're so right. But yeah, I mean, thank you, Johnny P, for once again being the documentarian, this time documenting a great iconic moment in wrestling history, probably bigger than the history of ECW, if you ask me. Papa Hales and Brad Stutz shirtless after Battlecade. Fantastic stuff, guys. As I said, that was kind of the impetus of this entire podcast, so I had to get that out there for everybody to hear. Because I do, in some ways, like to feel like this is what I want to do. I want everybody who's not in the know to be in the know. That's the point of my podcast, realistically, is to just kind of get that stuff out there that's not a secret, but it's not out there in a public forum as open, like, And it's just interesting, cool, fun stuff from wrestling and from fans behind the scenes. And CWF is probably one of the biggest things right now that is that. I mean, it's getting some buzz and people are talking about it, but not enough, honestly. I mean, there are so many bad shows that too many people watch, Lucha Underground being one of them, that like they just complain about and it's terrible, but all these people watch it and constantly talk about it. CWF, watch this instead, guys. It's an hour every week. It's free. It's on YouTube. It's phenomenal. Guys, I don't know if there's anything else you want to plug or any last thoughts you want to do before we get out of here, but the floor is yours.
I want to plug my Twitter because of this. So it's John, J-O-H-N, and all one word, Philipavage, which is like Philadelphia and Savage. So John, J-O-H-N, and then P-H-I-L-A-P-A-V-A-G-E. You put the at sign in front of it. And here's the reason I want you to follow me. Not because I'm building some kind of brand or anything, or I have some great documentary coming out. I wish I did. I don't. Really, it's because I'm pretty much dedicating my Twitter to CWF Mid-Atlantic for the most part at this point, or about 75 to 80% of it. I really want people to get involved. Go search hashtag CWF Worldwide. Again, all one word. Let's start live watching some of this stuff. Let's start interacting. Let's like build an online community to this. And look, it was a little bit there before I got here. But if there's one thing that I can do for this, I hope it's to broaden that with the out of towners and the people. I want to make it a cool kind of like thing to kind of have your virgin experience where you come in from how far away did you come from kind of a thing like I did. And I was like embraced and it was a really cool experience. And I want people to be doing that for every show and have the ambassadors like Spence, like JB, like Bruce, like Sophia and anybody else like, you know, oh, cool. This time so-and-so from online has come in. Let's hang out with them and talk to them and, you know, live with them as they kind of experience this almost as like hosts for the show. I just think it's just the coolest thing. You guys got to watch it. My final thought is that somebody said, oh my God, they have, I started late. And so did JB last night. And I was like, what? 10:30, 10:45. Somebody, tweeted to me like, oh my God, they have almost 100 viewers already, which I don't know their stats generally. But good people are watching it, but I thought like, oh, we've got to get that way, way up.
Absolutely.
Every week when I see the stats, I'm proud of them because I am so proud of Grant and Stutzy and everybody else involved and Cecil Scott. And there's many people that I just don't know their names yet, but I want every week to be like, you know, 15,000 people or more watching this show. Come on, guys. It's free. They have an obscene – you could never watch wrestling again. Throw out your collection. And as long as YouTube was there and somebody maintained the CWF Mid-Atlantic YouTube site, which, by the way, go search CWF Mid-Atlantic on YouTube. You're going to be blown away by the archive there for free. You know, I wish there was just a way to just send them money. It's mind-blowing. So just get involved, and I will throw it over to JB.
Yeah, like John said, follow me on Twitter at jbryant025. Not for any hot takes or any of that nonsense. Just follow me to keep up with what's going on here locally in the Carolinas. I'm following independent wrestling throughout the Carolinas, and I'll give my thoughts on the main land products as well. But CWF is something very special, and I know that word has been thrown around a lot tonight, special and unique, and it really is. And the hard work and dedication of these folks, and there's so many people involved that we've not even given a shout out to tonight when it comes to the putting on this show, every couple weeks or sometimes two or three times a month. They've even done that. But it's a product that's been around for a long time. And the one thing that we did not mention is the school, the dojo, CWF Dojo, where they're training a lot of these guys who are coming up through the ranks. If you're a young, inspiring, inspired wrestler who wants to get involved in the business, I really couldn't think of a better place to learn the fundamentals than right here in North Carolina at CWF. I really think that it's a great opportunity. There's been a lot of guys come through here who have moved on, and some guys that are still right here who are grooming to make that next step. And that's something that I know that Brad and the guys at the dojo would want out there. The school is, something that's special and unique, that they're able to grow their own crop of new talent. a guy like King Justice, who's come up through the system, a guy like Ethan Alexander Sharp. These guys that are coming up through the system are straight from the school. And that's something unique within itself, that they're running a school, they're running a weekly show on YouTube and touring around and doing shows, not just the CWF Arena, but they've ventured out a little bit outside the area this year. And I would look for more of that to come in 2017. So give me a follow, like I said, on Twitter. And let's get that live community watching the show every week up, just like John said. I'll be there talking about it. Unless I've last night I got a reprieve. I had to watch some basketball last night. Sorry, John. But as Stutzy said, you were there live. You get a hall pass. It's one of the things that we definitely want to grow. We want to grow the recognition of this of CWF. And thanks to John and his efforts and mine and a lot of other people, and maybe, just maybe, we can have a product to be proud of and something we can say, hey, this is the show that I identify with. This is the community I'm part of. And that's another word that John has kind of harped on tonight. That's community. It's unique. It's different. And I'm proud to be part of it.
Yeah, well, thank you guys both so much. And I mean, from two guys who have no reason to, other than being fans, to put over so much about trying to build the community and push the product, it just goes to show how good it really is, and they deserve it. And I kind of, that's going to be, I think, the call to action that we all have and we all kind of echo here. And I'll just kind of, I guess, put a bow on it by saying, don't be the fan. I mean, it's fine, and we appreciate the people who do it, but don't be the fan who just goes every 2 weeks to watch the wrestling. Be involved in this company particularly, and all the companies that you really enjoy who put out good work. Like, don't just be passive, but be an active fan. But again, thank you guys so much. Thanks everybody for listening.